to say I
This is America Weekend. I am Paul Harris. And that song, Sun City, was a protest song done in 1985 by a group called Artists United Against Apartheid. It was organized by Stephen Van Zandt, Little Stephen, from the E Street Band. And some of the artists on there included Bruce Springsteen, Bob Dylan, Ringo Starr, U2, Jackson Browne, Keith Richards, Bonnie Raitt, Peter Wolf, Pete Townsend, Gil Scott-Heron, Peter Gabriel, Miles Davis, and many more. It was a protest song against apartheid in South Africa. Sun City was a luxurious casino resort where many artists went to play. But these artists said, we're not going to go there as long as apartheid is a part of South Africa. My next guest was one of the people involved in putting that song together and has written about South Africa and in particular Nelson Mandela many times over the last half decade. He is a journalist, an author, a television producer, and a filmmaker. He's done 6 nonfiction films about Nelson Mandela and has a new book called Madiba, A to Z, The Many Faces of Nelson Mandela, which was published in conjunction with the new film, Mandela, A Long Walk to Freedom. With the death of Mandela on Thursday at age 95, I'm happy to welcome Danny Schechter to America Weekend. Hi, Danny.
Hey, thank you. You know, still recovering. A book came out. Our party was on Monday, and on Thursday, Nelson Mandela died, you know, at age 95. Not unexpected, but still, it's, you know, you're never really prepared for something like this, and the whole world has responded with a great deal of kindness and love for him, and it shows the impact that he had and that this movement in South Africa had on worldwide consciousness. And the artists who were out front singing about South Africa and protesting South Africa really brought this issue to the public, because at the time, the news media in South Africa was censored. Here it was self-censored. I was working at ABC News at the time, so I can testify to the difficulty we had getting stories about South Africa on the air even then. So, you know, the musicians did what the journalists couldn't do and actually talked about the issue in a way that it resonated with people. I guess if there's something you can dance to, that's something that you remember. So I was glad to hear you play that, because a lot of people have only focused on the political aspects of this, the congressmen, the politicians who made statements one way or the other, when in fact the musicians actually galvanized public opinion, not only for a boycott on the cultural front, but for economic sanctions that helped change South Africa.
A generation in this country didn't know much about apartheid, but learned about it a lot because of the song and the video. What impact did it have outside the United States? And did it have any impact in South Africa?
Actually, it was banned in South Africa. So they had got it through illegal means. So they didn't really have downloading in those days. You know, we didn't have the internet in the same degree that we do today. But the song resonated around the world. It was number one in many countries. In America, however, black radio said it was too white. White radio said it was too black. It's the cold, segregated music scene that we have here. But despite all that, once the video came out, directed by Jonathan Demme, it had such a tremendous impact on MTV and went to number one and had it, you know, got people talking about this issue. The UN honored the artists with a plaque. The members of the Black Caucus in Congress did so as well. So it had a big impact politically and practically, although most of the time the people who are in politics disregard the culture. You know, they're too important, self-important, to realize that more people learn through culture, through film, through, you know, art, than they do through reading, you know, kind of bills from Congress. So, you know, in a sense, I think it had a tremendous impact, and people in South Africa certainly still do. And I was very proud to be part of it, one of the organizers of it. And, you know, it actually had a global effect, leading to concerts, big concerts. I was also active in the one in Wembley Stadium in London, 90,000 people welcoming Mandela. Again, this concert playing on TV all around the world, except in the United States, where it was, most people think, well, we have the most open, freest media system. Well, we don't. And, you know, they basically suppressed it. But it had a tremendous worldwide impact anyway. And then when Mandela came to New York, 1990, people turned out in large numbers to greet him. They packed Yankee Stadium and stadiums in the other cities on his tour. So it was a wake-up call to people in Congress who now saw how unpopular he was. Ironically, he was also on the U.S. terrorist list, and he didn't get off the terrorist list in 2008.
Yep.
So, you know, here is a man who won the Nobel Peace Prize, who was elected president of South Africa, and yet officially in the United States, he was branded a terrorist. Tell me about that. That's pretty sick.
Well, isn't it true that for most of the time that he was in jail, I mean, even before he got out and was still on the terrorist list, that America was on the wrong side of apartheid?
Well, I like to put it this way. America was the wrong side, okay? America was aligned with these businesses, you know, diamond mines, gold, and all this in South Africa, and they wanted to preserve the status quo. And it was only because of all this grassroots pressure that changed. And, in fact, you know, Ronald Reagan vetoed the anti-apartheid law that was being passed by the Congress, and the Congress overturned his veto, which was unprecedented because many Republicans voted against, the veto, and so sanctions became law in the United States, and that's, I think, in part because of pressure from the public, which was, morally outraged by what was happening in South Africa. People like Reverend Jesse Jackson and many prominent people who spoke out early on made a big difference on this issue. But, you know, we're now living in a world where at that time South Africa had the biggest inequality in the world, gap between the rich and the poor. Now the United States has a similar gap. So I don't know if things are getting better or are they getting worse. And, I wrote about Mandela as part of the making of this movie, The Long Walk to Freedom. It's opening Christmas Day all across America, hundreds of screens, and it's gotten tremendous attention. And alongside the movie, I made a documentary on the making and the meaning of it, and also written this book, Madiba A to Z, The Many Faces of Nelson Mandela, which is in bookstores not only in the United States, but also in South Africa. So that was sort of a tribute to me that the people in South Africa thought that I had something new to say about, yep, their leader who's been written about so much.
Absolutely. And Danny, speaking of South Africa, the New York Times has a piece this weekend about a generation that they call the Born Frees, the kids who have been born since Mandela got out and apartheid ended. And it says that the Born Frees don't really care about those struggles of the past. Some of them are even learning Afrikaans.
Speak to a kid today about what happened during the Depression in the United States, or even what happened during the Civil Rights Movement, and they don't know. You know, Martin Luther King is summed up in four words: I have a dream. That's all they know about him, okay?
Right.
And this is the nature of our educational and media system. Simplify everything, lowest common denominator, dumb it down, simplify. And as a result, of course, people don't understand the context. But despite all of that, we were able in those years to get, the reality of South Africa out. I produced a television series called South Africa Now, which was seen all across the United States and around the world. So there was a hunger for information in the United States. The people want to know. They want to know what's happening. And they responded to Mandela with great love and enthusiasm. And we're talking not just black people, white people, Latino people, Asians, people from every background, because they saw that he was an authentic, morally, ethical person. And I had the privilege of making six films with him, so I traveled with him, got to know him a little bit. He had a great sense of humor, for example. I found out that he was an athlete. He had been a boxer as a younger man. He was a lawyer. So he had all these different sides to him, not just one sort of image. And that's what I write about in this book, Madiba A to Z, The Many Faces of Nelson Mandela. It's from Seven Stories Press.
One of the amazing things about Mandela to me was, Desmond Tutu said it himself. He said that without Mandela, the country would have gone up in flames. Somehow he was able to keep his country together after his release and through the election.
People began to feel that he was some savior, okay? they looked upon him as this leader who could do no wrong. And as a result, even though he rejected that all the time, he said, I don't have a magic wand. I didn't do this myself. This is a movement of the people. Nevertheless, because he had such integrity and sacrificed the 27 years in prison and was so intelligent and thoughtful.
He was the leader, and they absolutely needed that there. Danny Schechter, thanks so much for joining me here today and for all your work through the years.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
This is America Weekend. America.